The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the King Zone's Book Club podcast, a spin-off of the King Zone podcast, where Bede Germain and Super Marcy discuss the film and TV adaptions of Stephen King's work. The Book Club podcast focuses on his short stories and novellas. I am Stephen T. Boltz, and joining me as always is my most excellent co-host, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy.
Hello, hello. We are finally back again after a bit of a break.
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while. I looked this up, September of 2022.
Yeah, we're a little overdue. Yeah, the plan moving forward is to have a new episode every couple of months, and that will remain the plan.
So what's been going on? Why has it taken us so long? What's been happening?
I think it's just been an insane year and a bit with just life in general and planning a podcast, and then so much stuff comes up and then it goes on the back burner, and then it just, yeah, with all that craziness aside, you're back again. Tell all your friends.
Oh, no. Look, absolutely. Today, at long last, we're going to be looking at two King short stories that have only ever been in collections. They haven't appeared anywhere else. We're looking at Quitters Incorporated and The 10 O'Clock People. So the theme here, Marcy, is smoking.
I would never have guessed after reading both of those stories.
All right, let's just dive right into Quitters, Inc. Originally published in the short story collection Night Shift in 1978, plot follows a man's discovery of the brutal enforcement methods used by Quitters Incorporated, the firm he's enlisted to help him quit smoking. What did you make of this one?
Yeah, so I was familiar with the story because I have seen Cat's Eye from 1985, the anthology film, and that was covered very early on in the King Zone podcast. However, I had not read the short story, and as somebody who has dabbled with quitting smoking, I'm very wary of all organizations who want to help me quit now, because I'm not sure I'm going to like their methods if they're anything like this.
This was fun.
The basic plot of this one sees Dick Morrison, who is a smoker. He encounters a friend called Jimmy McCann, and they are just chatting while at the airport, and McCann says, well, you know, I've stopped smoking. This is Quitters Incorporated. He tells him about it, gives him a card. He thinks about it, but he's not too sure, but then one day decides to go ahead and give this place a try to stop smoking. But he finds out that Quitters Incorporated have some very strange methods of getting someone to quit smoking, which includes a lot of surveillance, very, very interesting methods. And we do find out by the end just how far things will go in the effort to make you not smoke.
He goes in and he meets Vic Donati, who's going to be his counselor, his help counselor here. And Donati, he has him sign it's a non-disclosure agreement, right? It's,
yeah,
like, you just don't know about what we do here, right? What happens at Quitters Inc. stays at Quitters Inc.
I can see why.
Right. And then he's like, so you're married? Yeah. Children? He's like, yeah. Do you love your wife? And Dick's like, yeah. Like, where's this headed? And it does get sort of weird. So he just, you know, he's like, look, come back in tomorrow. We'll take you through, you know, all the... He comes back in and Donati shows him this room. In the middle of the room, there's a little bunny. And he flicks a switch and gives the bunny shock treatment.
I mean, and... if you think that, wouldn't you be like, oh, well, yeah, I'm going out of here and I'm like reporting you to everybody. Right.
Thank you very much. But I think I'm good here. And he says, so this is what happened. You mentioned the surveillance and I love the surveillance. He says, for the first month, it's round the clock. Just 24/7, we're going to be watching you. The second and the third, cut back to 18 hours a day, but you never know which 18.
Yeah, yeah.
The fourth month, he says, that's when a lot of relapses occur. Surveillance goes back up to 24. And then the fifth month until a year, it's just 12 hours a day. But again, you never know which.
You don't know when, yeah.
But after that, the surveillance consists of random checks for the remainder of his life.
This is like signing a deal with the devil where this deal is getting worse and worse all the time. Thanks, Darth Vader. It really is like that, right? There's so many little bits and it's for life. So you're selling your soul for life.
Oh, it's so, I mean, that is a level of commitment to helping people that you just don't see. You just don't see anymore. Quitters Incorporated apparently had been started by, I can't remember the guy's name, but a New Jersey mob boss who had been a heavy smoker, and he realized just before he died that he must help others quit. So he started Quitters Incorporated, and they're just using mob tactics.
It literally is mob tactics, and it's for life. At least not as, you know, intense as like a billion year life contract with Scientology. But.
No, not quite that bad. I love this though because he brings the it reminds me of the EC comics, like the shock suspense stories, or, you know, not Tales from the Crypt, not those guys, but the other ones, the crime stories, because the way this comes around in the end, which we'll get to, I don't get to that just yet, but it felt a lot like there's a sting at the end, just like in all of those stories. There's always a twist in this. So he's got the rabbit. He shocks the rabbit. And of course, you know, Dick is like, you know, the fuck is going, what have I signed up for? Right.
Yeah.
And he said, if you're caught smoking, he's like, well, then you're going to shock me. He goes, no. We're going to shock your wife. If you smoke once, we're going to shock your wife. The second time you smoke, we shock you. The third time, we shock both of you. And the fourth time, we'll, you know, beat your son. He's going to beat up his, what, is the kid like 9 or something? The kid's like a...
I think it's like a, yeah, I'm trying to think back. I think, yeah, something about that age. And
it's a little kid.
Okay, so you shock his wife, you'll shock him, you shock them both, but we won't shock your son. We'll just beat him like he owes us 20 grand, you know.
That's the harshest leap, I think, too. You know, we're not even going to say it, you know. But... what makes it worse is the kid, the little boy, Alvin, he's in a special school. Like, he's mentally incapacitated. So he's in a special school. So he wouldn't even understand what's going on.
I have no idea. And it makes it so much worse.
And you thought it couldn't get worse than beating up a kid. No. Try this on. It's really horrifying. It's really horrifying. Anything after that, once they beat up the kid, anything after that, is more trips back to the shock room with higher voltage and more painful beatings for the son and the wife. Throw the wife in the deal.
We'll just add that into you as well.
After the ninth time, if he smokes 9 times, they break the son's arms. And then finally, if he hasn't learned by then, and honest to God, why would you keep smoking after that? They'll just shoot him. They shoot Dick, right? And... that makes him part of the unregenerate 2% because they do have a 98% success rate. Jimmy tells him in the beginning, you know, is it 98% success? And you can see why, you know, after this. This is great.
Yeah.
This is such a great story. No, I do. I love this story. It's early King, so it's like this 70s King. And I think some of his best stories, the best short stories, were from the 70s and 80s. Anything from Night Shift and Skeleton Crew, I can just read over and over and over again. And this one is right up there for me.
Yeah, this is the perfect example of that escalated quickly because it does. And like it's not a very long story. I'm not sure exactly how many pages it is off the top of my head. It's not that long of a story.
Yeah.
But it definitely escalates quickly. You're very gripped as to what the hell, where is this going? And especially like, as we say, like those things that they'll do just seem to escalate and escalate. And Donati tries to assure Dick and says, you know, 40% of people, they never violate the agreement. 10 are subjected to these like higher ones. The hardest part was just, you know, to withstand all the temptations to smoke. And Dick is kind of in that mindset. While he does want to quit, he's kind of too scared to really, like, he feels like he has to because he's too scared what will happen. And you can understand that. But as the story then goes on, which, again, you're not really expecting, but that's King. He doesn't want you to expect these things. You know, Dick is trying to quit. I think it was like months. He doesn't smoke. He's, you know, he still feels the craving, but he doesn't have like the shakes or anything. And when he does end up sort of taking a few drags, it's like he finds out that pretty much once he gets home, well, they have his wife, so
he's in a traffic jam and he's just getting very frustrated, finds an old pack of cigarettes in the glove compartment, and then somehow blames his wife for that. He blames Cindy for, you know, I told her to, you know, get rid of all the cigarette packs or something. It's like, dude, you're the smoker. You're the guy that hid them there. Don't put this on Cindy.
Exactly.
This is like, you know, it's victim blaming and she's not yet the victim. That's exactly where this is headed. And he gets home, as you say, and he gets the phone call. He's like, hi, Dick, this is Vic Donati. Come on in and, you know, let's take care of this. Let's get this done. And of course, Cindy is shocked at the low setting. At a low setting.
It's now. The low setting. Just to be clear, it's the lower setting, you know.
This is the part that sort of bothers me. Cindy bothers me because she's not very supportive. She's almost like, I don't think she's actually a threshold guardian because she's not necessarily keeping Dick from doing what he needs to do, but she's what we tend to call, my friend and I tend to call, a threshold harpy, where she's not, she's just there to just not whine, I guess, but she does, she's not helpful. Right, when Dick says he's quitting smoking, she's just like, oh really,
oh yeah, whatever. Attitude.
Totally not supportive at all. And I think we talked about this with, was it Lawnmower Man, Harold Parkett's wife? Like, all of those characters were very, very one-dimensional. And Harold Parkett's wife was very much like this as well. But I think I'm seeing this in a different light now, because while Cindy is definitely that character, this is a satire. And I've never seen it as a satire before. So when you have a satire, you're going to have characters exactly like that. They've got one note and they stick to it. And so Cindy bothered me for the first couple of times she showed up. And then I realized, you know, reading this again for the first time in, I don't know, decades, I would say, realized that no, wait, she's just, yeah, this is a satire. She's there because, I mean, what good is a supportive wife in a story like this?
Exactly. And I think the whole point does come to this moment of her being like that, because she gets shocked and Dick is expecting, like, wow, she's going to be really angry at me, really upset, disappointed, all those things. But then she's, well, I'm supportive of this, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, where did that 180 come from?
I agree. I was, she's very, and she's all forgiving and she's like, no, Dick, it's fine. They let you out of prison. Like, I didn't really find that his smoking was too much of a problem in their marriage. You know, like, I didn't see that. I saw that he was, what do you get, like wheezing and things like that.
Yeah.
The healthiest. And I guess that's what she's referring to. But yeah. I don't think that's the go-to reaction. I think
maybe
you come to that after a week, a month, something like that. But if you get basically, you know, electroshock therapy because your husband has smoked a cigarette, you're going to be angry. That's the go-to.
Yeah. That would normally be the go-to. And you'd probably then be more on, you better not have another freaking cigarette ever. If I get shocked again, you're going to be 6 feet under, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what you'd expect to happen.
Right. But no, she's cool with it. She's like, oh, no, really, that's cool. Fine. That's right, you know. And then it moves on a little bit. And I remember in the beginning when he's talking to his friend at the airport, when he's talking to Jimmy, he says to Jimmy, you know, did you put any weight on? And Jimmy's like, yeah, a little bit. And he's a little pained by this. But, Dick doesn't think anything of it. And as we're reading it, we don't think too much of it, except that, oh, you know, Jimmy's sensitive about his weight. But no, when Dick starts putting on weight, Donati says, look, you've got some wiggle room here. You put on a little weight here. Here's some diet pills. They're kind of, you know, not legal, but, you know, take these to get you down to your target weight. Because if you get over a certain weight, we'll cut off your wife's little finger. And this doesn't even come as a shock at this point.
At this point, you're like, hey, what else is new, Quiddersink?
And I dig that part of the story so much. He's like, yeah, well, then, you know, it's just matter-of-factly, right? But then Morrison runs into another friend who is trying to quit smoking and gets him on board. Like he gives him the card.
So he's sort of
spreading the gospel, you know, he's now the Jimmy McCann and he's like telling him. But then the end of the story, do you want to go there or do you want me to explain?
I will happily go there. So the end of the story is with Dick and Cindy meet back up with Jimmy McCann and his wife. But Dick, you know, as they're mingling, Dick realizes Jimmy's wife is missing her little finger on her right hand.
And it ends right. Like, that's just.
So you're left with, well, Jimmy strayed from his diet. He ain't doing that no more.
Oh, my God. It's not like, and none of this is funny. Like, we're laughing. This is
the. It's not funny. This is like, the story is shocking. It escalates. And there are definitely a few different themes and like metaphors going through this, but it the point of laughing is because you're shocked and it goes that far. And when you picture yourself in that position, it's like, yeah, if someone threatened me with all these things in that first meeting, okay, I'm stopping smoking if these people are watching me for life. But then they're bringing in, oh, no, you have to be a certain weight now.
Yeah.
Now, what comes next? Do you have to maintain a certain look, certain job? Like, where does it end?
Right. That's terrifying. That's the part that sort of reminded me of the EC comics. Just that sting, the little, you know, the little ironic twist at the end. I love that. A little bit of research on this one. Because like I said, once I realized it was, oh, this is a satire, I wanted to look a little bit more into it. And it was written in the late 70s, and smoking was just everywhere at that time. There, you didn't have a smoking and non-smoking section anywhere, like airplane, movie theaters, anything. It was just all over the place. And this was when the quit smoking movement had started to become a little popular. So, but it was only the people in the upper middle class, you know, the affluent people who could afford the effort, I guess, to quit smoking. So that's why Jimmy and Dick, they're both sort of salesmen. Jimmy is a salesman, right? Jimmy is in sales. And they were actually named after Dick Morrison. And Jimmy McCann, Dick was named after the tobacco company Philip Morris. And Jimmy McCann, named after the McCann advertising company.
Yes, I did read that as well.
I thought that was such a nice
little touches, which I like. Right?
Yeah,
and look, I mean, I can, especially being around like at that time, like the ideas for this, like it makes sense, especially when you know parts about King's own life, that he was obviously an alcoholic. He did drugs. He smoked. A lot of these things have reflected in his work. So there, you can look at this as being kind of with some of his works, like that autobiographical part. So he definitely probably went through a few fucking weird things about smoking, and he put that in this. And but it definitely, it goes along again with that deal with the devil. It's never black and white. There's always stuff there that you don't know about, and that this is kind of goes with that, I would say, as well, like that morality tale, I suppose.
Yes. But, well, I mean, think about that, a morality tale. Like, as far as morality tales go, you've got the mob boss wanting to help people smoking, but through violence and intimidation, right? And then you've got, but then you've got Dick going, no, this will be good. This will be good for my life and my family, and this will, you know, I'll be better. And again, through threats and violence to his family. Is it ethical for him to even agree to that, knowing that this is a possible outcome? It's really twisty and turny when you start looking at
it really is. And you can look at it as things with almost forcing someone to do what you want. There's many different ways you can read into that as well. For something that is not a very long story, it packs so much in that a short discussion is the tip of the iceberg with this. Absolutely. One. And that's what makes something like this great. And I am apparently just learning this right now. There was a Bollywood adaptation called No Smoking that was a neo-noir psychological thrillers based on Quitters Inc.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd heard about that.
I had no idea that existed, and I'm very curious now.
I haven't seen it, but I had heard about it. And, like, I'd seen a couple of the Dollar Babies. Quitters Inc. had been done as a Dollar Baby. And of course, I mean, Cat's Eye, like you mentioned at the top. But there have been some Dollar Babies of Quitters Inc. And I only found out today, this is very sad, he's abolished the Dollar Babies program. No more Dollar Babies.
Oh, really?
December, as of this month, it's no more. No more.
That makes me really sad.
I know. But there was several times it's been made into, you know, student films or whatever, you know, they use the Dollar Babies for. But I had only heard about this Bollywood version. I'll get to see if I can track that down for us. I think that could be fun. And then, I mean, like, we don't want to get into this too deeply, well, deeply at all, really, because you've already covered it. But I loved the adaptation in Cat's Eye. I just, everything in that, they just nailed every aspect of the story and brought the humor to it that there are two scenes I remember where he's shocking the wife and they play, is it 99 Tears that's going on at that point?
It's been a little bit since I've seen it now, so I can't quite remember.
It's a horrifying scene. It's a horrifying scene because she's in there, you know, being jolted. And they're playing this, you know, sort of peppy song. And then another scene with because it's Jimmy Woods plays Dick.
Yeah.
And he's at a party and he thinks he sees Donati out the corner of his eye, and they play The Police, Every Breath You Take.
Yes. That one I remember. Yes.
And really managed to you know, hit the paranoia aspects and everything like that, but really brought out the humor that I had not seen in the story up to that point. Now I read it again today. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it now. This is a lot funnier than I'd give it a credit for.
Yeah, look, it has been a few years since I did rewatch Cat's Eye, but yeah, certain parts as I'm reading the short story, like I'm remembering, especially in the car and parts of the ending with noticing the missing finger. It is a really good one. I recommend Cat's Eye. And yes, you can go back and listen to one of the early episodes and hear me and Bede chat about that one.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps up Quitters Inc. Before we move on, what do you want to rate this one? Marcy, how do you rate this one?
This is a very high rating from me. I give this one 4.5 missing pinky fingers out of 5. It's a great, great short story. It's told very well. It's a very tight, it's structured well. I really enjoyed it. But again, as I said at the start of this discussion, I don't know if I want to quit smoking. I'm too scared of all the places that promise me I can quit smoking. I don't want to put other people through shit, let alone myself. So, and what about for you, Steve?
I'm about the same. I'm going to give it 4. I shy away from halves. This is definitely a solid story. As you say, it's really tight. It gets in, it gets out, it gets right to the point. I think it's one of his best. Like I said, anything from Night Shift, you're looking at about a 4-star story, just as a base level. You know, they're all so good in that one. But this one, yeah, this is definitely one of my all-time faves, I've got to say.
Yeah, it's a great one. And for those who may not have read it, please check it out. It is in Night Shift.
Now, the next story, The 10 O'Clock People, appeared only in the short story collection Nightmares and Dreamscapes in 1993. It's about an office worker in Boston who discovers that people in positions of authority are actually inhuman monsters disguised as people, and only he and a small group of others can see them. Now, if that sounds familiar, you've probably read Ray Nelson's short story, 8 O'Clock in the Morning. No? Well, you've probably seen the movie that they based on. It's John Carpenter's They Live is where that came from. So what I just said about Quitters Inc., how it sort of gets in, gets out, doesn't waste any time, I feel exactly the opposite about the 10 O'Clock People.
Yeah, there is a moment. Now, I did like this. It is a little bit too long. There is a point towards the third act of the story where there is this impatience in the main character, who we'll speak about momentarily, Brandon Pearson, for something to, you know, get on with it. And it's a little bit like that with this story. It's when you get to that third act, it's more like, this is really bizarre. I kind of think I know what might be happening, but I'm not sure. And the initial setup is quite interesting. I think it's that middle that suffers the most. And this would have been, you could have easily cut out a good 15 pages without losing anything from this.
Yeah, I completely agree. The way it starts off is Pearson is outside. He's outside his office building. He's having a smoke. It's 10 o'clock. And that's what the 10 o'clock people are. They're people who go out around 10 o'clock for a smoke break. He sees a monster. He sees what appears to be a person from the neck down, but its head is this horrible sort of, I don't know, deformed bat-like face, right? And he's just about to freak out. He's just about to start screaming when a young dude next to him, named Duke Reinman, he stops him, he calms him down, and he says, yeah, look, yes, you saw it, okay? Yes, it's real. Don't freak out. Just go about your day. Meet me, you know, jump out a little early. Meet me at 3 o'clock and we'll go, you know, get some beers and we'll talk about this. By the way, your boss is also one of these creatures. Okay. So yeah. Just leaves it at that, right? And Pearson, he goes about his day. He does go into the office and sees his boss, and she has this, they call them Batmen. So she's one of the Batmen. And like he's trying to be cool about it, but you know, he barely gets out of there. He goes to see Reinman. They meet up at this, is it a dance club? It's not like one of those upscale bars that they usually go to. It's this weird dance club in the middle of the afternoon. And then they just sit there and talk about smoking and quitting smoking for a long time. I listened to the audio of this one, and just for comparison, I also listened to the audios of Quitters Inc., which was 45 minutes. This story lasted nearly 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It was an hour, I think it was an hour and 45, an hour and 50, something like that. Mm. This conversation about them smoking and quitting smoking wore on for 7 to 8 minutes. That is a long fucking time.
It is. It is.
To not talk about the bat creatures that you saw that morning.
Yeah, there is a link between smoking stuff, and it takes a little bit too long to get there with this conversation. It's like you could have just asked him and said, so you're a smoker who doesn't smoke as much as they used to. You've cut down. Well, here's what's going on with you.
This is what happened. So, and Ryman, like, Pearson says, Ryman goes to use the phone or something, and Pearson goes, I thought we were going to talk about the Batman. And Duke's like, oh, but we have been. And then he goes off and he comes back and explains, yeah, just what you just said. There's a chemical imbalance in people who are going through nicotine withdrawal, and that allows them to see the creatures, which is fantastic. I think that's one of the more insane leaps in logic in Stephen King stories. And you just go, yeah, no, okay.
You're like, I can buy this. I can get it. Nicotine withdrawal is full on. And like when you're withdrawing from any kind of drug, for example, like you can go on hallucinations and stuff, and even that would be, you'd just be like, oh, so maybe I'm just hallucinating from this withdrawal, but like, oh no, these things are real. It's this specific thing that only, you know, the us who are withdrawing the nicotine in a certain way can see.
It allows you to see through the hallucinations. Yes, because what these things are, they're sort of projecting a false face onto, you know, onto, yeah, these people. And so, like, in that regard, yeah, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. But my God, it's just taken forever to, yeah, to hear, right? And so not to compare, but to contrast, let me say, mm-hmm, in They Live, this is probably the, like, roughly the 20-minute mark where he finds out, you know, where Roddy Piper finds out what's really going on. In our story, in 10 o'clock people, this is the halfway mark. Okay. So I'm like, all right, where's this going to go? Well, Reinman takes Pearson to a resistance meeting. They leave the bar after Reinman explains, yes, it's your boss is a Batman. It turns out that the vice president is a Batman, but you'll never see a Batman janitor. You'll never see a Batman working at the convenience store, right? Because they only want power. They're people in high places, right? Which again, they live, okay? So fine, fantastic, right? Now we're gonna go to this resistance meeting, which Roddy Piper is also taken to a resistance meeting. So it's almost beat for beat, this same story, but He gets to the meeting, and the leader of the group, who was a house painter, I believe. Again, nobody in a power position. It was just this dude, right? He's welcoming them all. He says he's got some big news, and then he just rattles on. And this is the part you were.
Yeah.
He's just going on and not saying anything. Right. He's going blah, blah, blah. And he's talking, and we thank you all for being here. This is important work that we're doing, and yada, yada, yada. And he never gets to the important work. And people in the audience, his other resistance fighters, the other 10 o'clock people, are getting restless. And I can feel their pain at that point. Right. As you said, you know, get on with it. But it's Pearson who sort of figures it all out, because the leader keeps looking at his watch. He's expecting something to happen. And of course, he's just waiting for Batman to arrive. He's sold them out. Not in so many words. He says, no, I brokered a deal.
Mm. And we know what that means.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you sold them out. Okay. You can't trust these Batmen. They use us for food. Like, they eat humans, right? You don't think this is going to end well for anyone. So the Batman come in, they storm the thing, and blah, blah, blah. But then that's sort of the end of it. Pearson runs off with a couple of other people at the meeting. Reinman is killed. Sadly, these survivors, they escape the meeting. They flee to Nebraska, and they form a new resistance group. And then they just keep fighting the Batman underground. It's like you mentioned a third act. I feel like it doesn't have a third act.
It's almost like it was leading to a third act, but doesn't get there.
Yeah, he's just, well, you know what happens after this. You've seen the movie.
I mean, we've seen every movie where anything like this happens. But yeah, more specifically, yes, they live.
That's true. You're not wrong. And so I'm feeling like I don't know what I was to get from this. I mean, you look at it as light entertainment. That's fine. But if it's light entertainment, I've already read the story, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, so. I haven't.
I've already read 8 o'clock in the morning, and I've seen They Live. So I kind of like this just seemed like a rehash, like a.
Yeah, I haven't read that short story. I'm kind of curious to read it now. And it's also made me want to rewatch They Live. So there you go.
I mean, that's a bad thing.
I was going to say, it's not a bad thing. I think this one had a lot of potential. And there are certain things that do really capture you, like how it does begin. It's like, oh, what is going on here kind of thing. And as you finally lead up to this resistance meeting, you get very curious. It's, you know, you kind of ramps up a little bit, you're curious, but then it keeps stalling a little bit. But what I feel like just gave away what was actually happening is a line before they get there, which is mentioned, like most of these resistance people are going to be at this one location for this meeting. And I'm like, oh, so it's definitely a trap and the Batman are going to come and try and get them. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
Yeah.
I think the most shocking thing actually was, I nearly called him Rhinestone, right? Reinman getting killed, because you don't expect that. And it's a very weird thing. Like it does have that smoking element, but what are you trying to say about it? I don't know if it quite gets there with anything like that. Whereas I feel like Smoker's Ink, Quitter's Ink actually, you know, has something to say about it with the extremes of, you know, quit smoking. And I think King was like, do it the way you fucking want to. Kind of thing. I'm not sure this had much of a message other than kind of, you know, doing a They Live sort of, I don't know, almost I guess Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of even V, the series V with the lizard people.
Love that.
So a bit of that in there as well. So yeah, there are bits that probably inspired it, but I think there could have been more to it. And yeah, I think it would have been a much tighter and better read if it was a bit shorter as well, like it got to those points. And I even would have added just a bit extra of what this new resistance group is doing, because it's almost like, what, a paragraph maybe for the end with that, I think. Yeah. So I think it was one that had a lot of potential. I did enjoy it for the most part. There's interesting ideas that kind of, yeah, maybe copy things a little bit too much, but it is what it is. We're in an era where things just repeat themselves anyway. So
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. I feel either it needed to be a lot shorter or a lot longer. This is either a much shorter story or a novel. Something more. Don't give me just a glimpse into this world. Give me more. And again, you know, I wasn't necessarily looking for a moral to the story or anything like that. I was just, you know, just reading it for entertainment. But he does come to a point where he talks about the smoking section of the restaurant that they're in, the smoking section of the club, and how it's very dingy. He looks up at the TV and the news presenter looks yellowed and sickly, but he looks over at the TV just behind the bar and it's the same guy, the same news, and it looks fantastic. How, you know, it's like, okay, so wait a minute. This is the smoking section. The only people there are smokers and you're complaining about the, you know, the state of it. You did that. You know, you guys did that. And yeah. He literally compares it to the separate but equal facilities in the 40s and 50s. He's comparing being a smoker to segregation. And I'm really uncomfortable with that. I get very uncomfortable with that part. Literally uses the line, "Welcome to the back of the bus," this story. And you cannot equate smoking to what the blacks went through during that period. I'm sorry.
Extra reading. I'm like, no, this is like, very much of a stretch. People were being segregated for very different reasons. Smokers kind of have to smoke outside, kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, you want to smoke. That's your choice. Okay. Mm. It doesn't make you, it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't just like I don't want to inhale your secondhand smoke. Blacks were not, do not give off secondhand smoke just by virtue of their existence. Do you know what I mean? Like trying to draw that parallel, I think was a real fucking stretch, but that appears to be the point of the story. And I almost rather ignore that and just look at it as light entertainment. And that's exactly where it falls down for me, Marcy, because if it is light entertainment, I've seen it. I've seen it before, So this one didn't really do it for me. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't great.
Yeah, I think I pretty much feel the same way. Where, it is light entertainment. It's enjoyable for what it is, but just being like eye rolling over the, like, this is a different kind of segregation, buddy.
And if you skim over the 7 pages where they're just talking about, what are we talking about here? And it could be tightened up. Tightened up, it might be a little easier to take.
Yeah, but, and as you said, like it would work as a much shorter story or an actual long novel where you get into what this resistance would look like, where these 60 pages would have been like, the first couple of chapters to a much larger story, which could have been something, but alas, it is.
Yeah. Now I've got to rate this one 3 crushed cigarettes out of 5.
I am also rating it 3, but I'm rating it 3 lots of Nicorette withdrawal giving you weird hallucinations of bat people out of 5. It's a weird one. It was definitely not as good as Norma that we discussed, but all the same, I enjoy reading all of Stephen King's work that I can, and just not one of the more stronger ones, but interesting enough as it is.
Yeah. No, any king is good king. I'll take it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But again, looking at Nightmares and Dreamscapes, not my favorite collection. Not my favorite collection. You know, that's good. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. I guess he's evolving as a writer during that period. 70s and 80s is just classic for me in any case. So, that's where we're at with this one. Now, the next episode, we're going to do a crossover. Marcy, we're doing a crossover with
Bead. Yes,
we are. Yeah. Bead has, he's got a podcast called Bead versus the Living Dead, where he looks at every incarnation of Night of the Living Dead, all of its remakes and sequels and prequels and whatnot. And we have chosen to do zombie stories, the Stephen King zombie stories. We're going to have Bead on as a guest to talk about Home Delivery and The Return of Timmy Baderman.
Interesting. I have, again, not read those and look forward to doing that. And yes, we do welcome our first guest being Bead onto the book club. So very excited for that. And you can hear me, Steve, and Bead on a recent bonus episode of the To Be Tuesdays podcast where we watched The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the 8th Dimension. So that is available to listen to as well.
All right, Marcy, we'll wrap this up. Where can people find you on the internet this week?
Yeah, if you want to listen to more of the King Zones Book Club podcast, or in fact, the King Zone, you can find the podcast podcast feeds for those just by searching the podcast title on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the good places, as well as checking out supermarcy.com. And you can find everything there for all the other podcasts under the Super Network banner as well. And personally, I am pretty much available everywhere as Super Marcy. You can find me on all the socials, and I think the only place it differs might be letterboxed, as that is super_Marcy. And for you, Steve?
I'm on letterboxed as well. Check that out and see what I've been watching. I am Fulci Rama over there. Stephen T. Bolts everywhere else. Insta, blah, 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 all the usual stuff. I have a column, I don't know if it's a column or a feature, over there at forcesofgeek.com called Creepshows and Fright Nights, where I look back at 80s horror that I saw as a kid and loved, and I look at it now and sort of see how it fares with the passage of time. And also, of course, Bede and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake, where Bede and I look at all of the Friday the 13th movies. We look at the ripoffs, both foreign and domestic. We look at fan films, unused scripts, comic books, anything having to do with Camp Crystal Lake and Jason Voorhees. And you can access that through Bede versus the Living Dead podcast feeds and socials, or directly through Spotify and Apple.
Excellent. And we will be seeing everybody back very soon. Not over a year's time. We will be back in 1 to 2 months, or whatever I said earlier in the podcast. I've already forgotten.
But definitely not a 14-month hiatus.
Yes, basically that's what we're trying to say. So until next time, read all the Stephen King you can and listen to the show.
Right. Very good. Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you, Steve, and goodbye.
See you next time. Bye.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy Shark, do 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 do. Surfy Shark, do 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 do.